Blog Talk Radio.
Check one, check two, check three.
Because here we go with the main event of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen in attendance, Bucks and fans joining us around the world. It's time for the bout you've all been waiting for. Finally, it is showtime.
Here, man, we dedicate our life to this sport. We give, we do. Thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we want that fight to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday night, normal time. I did get the night off, and I figure why not go a little bit early just because the basketball game starts in like an hour and a half or something like that. Anyway, we have a lot to discuss. Most of it is inside the ring, which, you know, there's plenty of fight news out there. No Nito Donaire, Oscar De La Hoya, Chris Colbert got a new opponent that most people approve and actually like this fight better. Although late opponent, let's see what kind of shape he's in is would be my only thing. Maybe he was already scheduled on an upcoming fight card. I don't know, but either way, we have a lot to talk about. Obviously, this weekend, Gervonta Davis steps in the ring against Mario Barrios. He's going from 130 to 140 to take on a top 10 guy. It's an interesting fight. Obviously, I'm not going to sit here and worry about the secondary belt that is, quote-unquote, at stake. I'm not really too worried about the belts. That's just kind of an ongoing theme. I'm worried about the matchup, and I think it, you know, being that the 135 Gervonta Davis didn't really carry his power too much. Now, some of that could have been, you know, preparation. But I think, you know, Barrios has pop. He has plenty of power. He'll be there to get hit. But I think it's an interesting fight. It doesn't necessarily scream pay-per-view main event. I'll say that, but obviously Gervonta Davis is a ticket seller. Looks like they're going to do a healthy gate. And, you know, he's making a healthy amount of money. So he's basically going to be a pay-per-view fighter. Lomachenko also on the card against – or not on the card. Wouldn't that be great? He steps back in the ring after his second loss and his first loss in a while against Nakatani. Stylistically, could be an interesting fight there with all that length. We did see Teofimo Lopez have some issues with him as well. Lubin and Rosario, that's more like it. The co-feature is what I meant before. I really like that fight. This is a big step up for Lubin. Shouts out to Rosario, too, dude. Like, you go J-Rock, Charlo, and then Lubin? Like, shouts out to you, dude. So we're going to talk about and preview and predict this schedule coming up. Obviously, the weekend was full of a lot of different fights. Two out of the three main events pretty much turned out blah-zy-blah as far as competitiveness. Montiel did show plenty of heart, plenty of chin, in an awkward style that made him look like he was really wobbly, and then somehow he'd land a punch back and make it through the round. So he gave Charlo some fits at times. Charlo would kind of go from exchanging to, you know, to using his ring IQ. We'll talk about some of the undercard fights as well. Leo and Alameda. That was a competitive fight. You know, we figured Dogbo and Lopez would be competitive. It was an interesting fight. a Michaela Meyer one, Munguia, Inoue scoring knockouts. Teofimo COVID, and I'm not here celebrating that fact or making fun of him. It sounds like it was a serious case of it, too. So we'll talk a little bit about that minorly. They have a new date. But, yeah, when you hear the effects he was going through, 102-degree temperature, it doesn't sound like he – I don't know. They talk about 8 weeks from now, and it's like, well, hopefully he's good because, it's like I said, it sounds like he had some serious effects. But they pushed that back. We'll definitely talk all about this weekend. What's next for Charlo? I've been saying Daniel Jacobs for a while. Do I want to see him against Golovkin and Canelo and even Andre? Yeah. But clearly the Canelo fight this year. Golovkin, that fight's not going to happen. It's had a chance to happen in the past, and it would have happened probably then. So it's not going to happen now. DeAndre, it's always been kind of like, well, my thing is, if you're going to send, a Charlo, a commodity for the PBC over to DAZN, it'd probably be for Golovkin or Canelo. It probably wouldn't be for Andre. It's not that I don't want that. I just deal in reality. I think it makes you a much happier boxing fan rather than, but that's not going to happen. I did hear Eddie Hearn say, and he says a lot, but he did say that if you pay us like Derevchenko, we'll come to Showtime. Maybe that's what they'll have to be, but then people are going to complain about pay-per-view because, I don't know. I really don't know what's next, but that's why I say Daniel Jacobs, because he's still a decent commodity and name. And, 168, he definitely looked not that good at. Some of it may have been the opponent. By the way, did I mention Gabe Rosado? Speaking of Rosado, his knockout, his upset knockout over a body-punching machine who was going to take over the division. Did I mention that one? Gabe, big knockout, dude. His reaction was so – his little short steps, like the energy he had me pumped up late night because I had to work. So I watched this stuff super late at night and then the next day at night and stuff like that. But Gabe, dude, shouts out to you, dude. That was dope. I forgot to mention that. But anyway, I just think Daniel Jacobs, that'll have Jacobs get up for the fight as well. Clearly he looks better at 160 than he did 168. I just think that's still a legit fight. They do have a little bit of a past run-in, right, where they ran up on each other. So, I'd be down for that fight, and it's makeable. Makeable. Now, I know you're going to say, Chris, he's on DAZN too. Whoever you are, no, he's not. I mean, maybe he has an option. Wasn't it a three-fight deal? Maybe there's an option in there. I'm not saying that's not a possibility, but I'm pretty sure he's a free agent. So, and obviously he has ties with Al Haymon in general. He's even said that, Al Haymon's my long-term advisor regardless in life. You know what I mean? So there's a relationship there. And obviously, he left the PBC platform because Canelo and Golovkin, were not there. They were HBO and then later DAZN. So I would like that fight. That doesn't mean, like I said, I wouldn't like to see that. I mean, the Andre and Jacobs fight isn't some kind of like, Andre is undefeated. So undefeated against undefeated is dope. But I wouldn't downgrade Jacobs like, I'd rather see Andre after the Jacobs fight. I wouldn't do that. I think Jacobs is, on the last part of his career. But he's always been an get-up-for-fights type of guy. That Golovkin fight is one of his best performances. Obviously, the Quillen fight was done early, so you'd probably say that's his best performance. But I still think, Jacobs, owes a fight. you know, to, or I mean, Golovkin, I should have said, is owed a fight from Golovkin. Because that was a competitive-ass fight, dude. That was a competitive fight. So we're going to break down all this stuff. Like I said, there is plenty of news. A lot of people, you know, we did our show last Monday, so it's been over a week. Wilder was silent at the presser. I actually just got a message. Someone's very angry that he was silent. I guess they like No Shirt Fury. He was kind of funny in it at times when he kind of said, here, I'll just play the part. Since he's not going to talk, I'll play the part. Malik Scott obviously was talking for him. Some people are looking into that, I think, a little too deep. Once again, they think, you know, Wilder's mentally deranged and he's out of his mind and it just, he's really done. He's done mentally. And it's like, he looked pretty focused to me. Obviously, he's got an issue with the media. And he's got an issue with Tyson Fury. And in some ways, more does he have to say. Now, I understand the media not getting a shot at asking the questions of, hey, why'd you make up all those reasons or excuses, right? So obviously that's why the media is pissed off. And I get that part of it. But I don't know, dude. I think he's been training most of the time. They talked about multiple fight camps that they've had, and same with Fury said the same thing. So I don't think he's this mentally unstable, completely done career type thing. I mean, that it's just so funny how, like, did you think that, I don't know, like, Klitschko was able to, I mean, shit, Klitschko looked a lot more, he made a ton of excuses, by the way, Vladimir Klitschko. And he looked trash at times when he tried to just sit there and brawl with people. So you could sit there and say his career was done after taking a couple losses and getting off the mat a bunch of times. And then all of a sudden he changed up his style, and all of a sudden that wasn't the case. And we were screaming sometimes, Emmanuel Stewart, you know, rest in peace, screaming for him to throw his right hand after he set up the jab for 8 rounds. So, and I'm not saying he's got a power jab. I'm not trying to give Wilder that kind of jab, but it's just funny when people fight the best and then they get their ass kicked in the second fight, clearly the third round, whatever happened, mind or his legs or whatever, right? After the, you know, in that third round when he got hit in the back of the head and the ear and all that, clearly the equilibrium was off. So his legs were not the same, whether it was coming into the ring and early on or after that shot. I just, when people fight the best, this is, sometimes this is why you can't market people as much after they lose, or they build up fights to make it worth it more, because this is the type of stuff you get, not just from fans, which I, you know, I definitely can understand fan and especially fanboys saying all this crazy shit, but this is media members saying he's deranged and all that. And it's like, I wouldn't say he's deranged. He's clearly, you know, he feels like he's been wrongfully done. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but to sit here and say he has no shot in this fight, I just don't get that, man. I just don't get that. But anyway, I don't know why I was talking about that. Oh, yeah, someone sent me a message about the presser. A little to do about nothing. There were some funny moments. There was, like, what, a 6 or 7 minute stare down that was pretty intense, but that was about it. There wasn't a whole lot. This stuff's out there. You know, this fight is going to sell itself. I think you can tell that by how they priced it and how, you know, how the tickets have gone. Anyway, if this is your first time listening to the Rope of Dope Radio podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeofdoperadio. You know, it streams live at archives on BlogTalk and Rope of Dope. You don't have to go there and download the show directly or listen to the browser. You can find the platform on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, and a whole lot of other places as well. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found on a whole lot of places. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's boxing, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, everything, soccer, everything in between. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. Plans start as low as $69.99 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. Of course, you can stream it anywhere on any device. They have the cloud DVR available, and if you sign up for the choice package and above, it gives you a free year of HBO Max. That's AT&T TV. Okay. All right. Like I said, there's a lot of chitter chatter about what's going on this weekend, about calling a WBA belt, you know, with Bob, or wait, not with Bob. We belt Al, the with Bob only, or Warren Bob only is the WBO. What am I thinking? But, you know, it kind of reminds me of the fight coming up on Sunday, by the way, at the Minneapolis Armory. Those tickets are selling pretty well as well. Pretty sure all the club seats are gone, which is kind of interesting. Maybe somebody bottom is going to resell them, but they generally don't sell out the second level balcony. It's a nice little dope spot. I think they're like $100 a piece, maybe a little more, but you get like a little VIP couch and you get to, you know, there's a bar that's really quick there. Anyway, people are kind of taking the bullshit secondary belts out on a fight, which is silly. Like, I've seen multiple Twitter handles talk about shit belt, shit fight. You know, and it's like, if you don't think it's a belt, then he's not a champion. Okay, cool. I'm with you. Now he's just a 4-0 dude. We're talking about Morrell, David Morrell. So he's taking on a 12-0 guy. So it's a prospect fight. You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't know. My thing is Gervonta Davis and Mario Barrios, it is what it is as far as the WBA. We know who it is, the lineal, the undisputed. We now know who that is. We didn't know that before. Now we do. But to sit here and only talk about that, it's just stupid. Like, why even give it why even talk about it then? Because you're actually spreading, you know, oh, that's a bullshit belt. Oh, so that's a good belt? So they're, what about vacant WBOs or, you know, like vacant belts in general? What about counting Golovkin's vacant belts and not the real WBA? It's, you know, down the line, someone ducked him, so he got, you know, moved up, and that's fine. I get all that, but it just, if you're not worried about belts, then just look at the matchup. And Davis and Barrios, you know, Davis, his last fight was at 130. He's going up to 140 and fighting the top 10 guy. I just don't think it's that bad the way people act like it is. Anyway, like I said earlier, we knew this weekend in the main events anyway, we were hoping one of them would turn out, well, we were hoping all of them, but two out of the three were pretty damn one-sided. But one of them, although it was one-sided on the scorecards and one-sided round by round, within the round, there was a lot to take home with. A lot of action, a lot of back and forth, a lot of, how is Montiel not down? And I'm talking, of course, of Charlo and Montiel. Like I said, you can't really even give them that many rounds, but it was a competitive fight. That was interesting because it just, every time Montiel looked wobbled, he found a way to either fire back and land or fire back and make Charlo kind of go, okay, hold on, you know? And it just, there was some moments there, especially early, where it was like he may have been TKO'd. It was like, dude, I don't think he should have been TKO'd, but you know how it works sometimes. If you're not throwing back, the ref stops the fight, and there was moments where you're like, dude, you got to throw back. You're on the rope, you know, but he would. He would tag Charlo. So, you know, clearly Charlo came out with his jab, and he was landing nice right hands to the body. And Montiel was going to the body as well and landing his left hook. That's one of his favorite punches. And like I said, how many rounds can you give Montiel? I mean, you definitely give him the eighth. I gave him the 11th. Like, there's plenty of rounds you can say, well, that was, or I shouldn't say plenty, but there were some rounds where you're like, okay, that was his round. You know what I mean? But he just kept fighting back. And, you know, sometimes he would score Montiel, you know, some really nice shots. And he was kind of on the outside early. And then he started coming forward and landing really well in exchanges. And even like the fourth round, very close round, that could have been one of those. You know what I mean? That could have been one of those. So I'd say the fifth round for Charlo was dominant. Several big shots, that is probably one of them where it looked like, oh, you know what I mean? Even in the sixth round, I think it was a hard right hand that had him hurt early and taking shots. But he managed to fire back and land a good shot or two in that sixth round when it looked bad. And then it seemed like there'd be moments like in the seventh round where it was disciplined Charlo, and he would land good shots and circle them and pivot away or reset. And so, you know, it was kind of all over the place. In the eighth round, I mean, I'm not going to say Charlo was full-on hurt, like, but it seemed like he was at least wobbled. He at least stumbled. I think it was an uppercut and hooks that did it. Maybe it was a right hand, actually, that did it. I think that's what did it. But it was fun. It was a good fight. It was one of those, you know, fights where you're like, okay, we know who's going to win, but at least we had fun doing it. And shots out, you know, to Montiel, because it seemed like, I mean, not just the chin and everything like that. And we talked about, now, of course, people are going to say, oh, Munguia knocked him out, you know, a little while back. And that's true. Now, that fight was at 147. And even at 154, after a while, Munguia didn't really look as well as he does now at 160. So clearly at 147, Montiel, he's a pretty tall dude. That wasn't the weight for him. And they even said it, he was switching between southpaw and all that. And he got caught in the middle. I remember that's exactly what happened. But, you know, on paper, that's what made you think, huh, you know. And then Montiel had a really, you know, competitive draw, I think it was, with a guy who, you know, Charlo knocked out pretty early, I think third or fourth round. So it was just one of those, you just hope that Montiel can give a good fight, and that's what he did, dude. That's what he did. Right when it looked bad, it turned good. You know what I mean? And even though he was getting hit with thudding shots, he found a way to keep charging forward or just have this awkward style where he's over here, then he's over here there, and then he's whipping a left hand, and then he, I don't know. He had these uppercuts, and it was just fun to watch. It was competitive. Charlo said, hey, this dude is a warrior. And it was good. It was fun to watch. It was very fun to watch. So I definitely got to give Montiel a lot of credit. You could tell that Charlo, you know, was clearly, what was it, 22 wins and all of them by knockout? You know, so the guy has power. That's obvious. And or at least a fair amount of pop, you know. And you could see Charlo respected it, you know, because he's like, all right, dude, this round I'm going to fight smarter. I'm going to win the round cleanly, because every time I exchange, you could just see he was in danger a little bit of getting hit by a counter. And he was like, you know, now I don't know if what was going on locally in Houston with a lot of interviews and a lot of press stuff, I don't know if that messed up the ending of his camp, and that's why he was a little short the first time. Was it 0.4? And then he came back and made it. Just fine. So maybe he lost focus. I don't know. But I don't really want to take away much from, you know, take away much off of Montiel's performance either, because that's making excuses for Charlo. Well, Montiel's just a tough dude, man. He's a tough dude that's awkward. And his style, it did, I'm not going to say trouble, you know. I did see several people talk about tweets and even someone on YouTube and boxing forums and stuff like that talking about, you know, Charlo went life and death with Montiel. And it's like, that's not life and death, dude. You know, like, come on, dude. Life and death? Was he on the canvas? Did he have to, like, come on, dude. He got buzzed or whatever. wobbled, whatever you want to say, but both of them did then. You know, shit, I mean, Montiel was wobbled a good portion of the fight, but sometimes it's literally how he moves his legs and feet where you're like, that's awkward. Is that how he fights or not? You know, like, but the bottom line, he was hard. It was a lot of hard. So that was a fun fight to watch. I've already kind of gone over the Charlo thing in the intro. I actually think Daniel Jacobs is the most realistic option that can be made. Like I said, that, you know, Golovkin has got a New Year's Eve fight with Murata, and he may take a stay busy fight in the meantime. Clearly, he's been holding out for Canelo. He's only fought, what, Derevchenko was his best fight since he's been on the zone. So that's not going to happen. I mean, you know, a while back, the WBC said, hey, we're calling this fight, and the winner fights Canelo. And he's like, well, why don't I just get the Canelo fight, which is what he did. And you know, Charlo at the time, like, got it. He's like, I'll let those guys fight, and I want one of them, whether it's Golovkin or Canelo. And it just never happened. We know the WBC, it doesn't get made as much as the Devin Haney stuff with Teofimo and Loma with the franchise. But we know at 160, the franchise belt came in, and it's just weird shit. You know, but that doesn't mean Canelo was ducking Charlo either, you know. He had bigger options at the time. And so, you know, it is what it is, you know. DAZN, for whatever reason, can't make the Golovkin-Andre. Well, not for whatever reason, the same reason, basically. But it is frustrating because they're on, you know, they're on the same platforms. Like Munguia, you know. Munguia and Gabriel Rosado, I like that fight. But why isn't Munguia getting the Andre fight then? They're both on DAZN. They're both undefeated. Let's make that fight. You know, so you got to make your in-house fights as much as you can, and then a potential for crossover comes. But if you have all these middleweights and you're not making them, I mean, the most competitive fight they've made at middleweight was probably a PBC fighter in Derevchenko going over and fighting Golovkin, and that was for a mandatory for a belt. Otherwise, I really don't think Canelo Jacobs was super competitive. You know, I had it like 9-3 or whatever. Good fight on paper, obviously. You got a unification and all that. But, like, that's why I just think Jacobs, you know, I think it's a really good fight. Jacobs for Charlo, it's a good payday for Jacobs, so, and he'll probably get up for that fight. That's what I would do next. If, you know, I mean, Eubank Jr. was around, but then he went and signed with somebody. This could have been this last week. It could have been Charlo Eubank Jr., but he went and signed with somebody else because he was over here. And obviously, COVID played a part. He was possibly going to get a good win, but oh boy, got hurt. So it kind of made it weird for him. So yeah, that's what I think. I think Daniel Jacobs' fight should be next. I think it's makeable in reality, and also judging by multiple, you know, interviews from Jacobs, he's down for it. He's down for it. He's already fought Golovkin. He's fought Canelo. This is a big fight for him. This is probably the biggest name beyond like Caleb Plant, who's gaining, you know, with viewership on Fox and stuff that up late, right? But I mean, Benavidez is still a name that's starting to climb, you know, but I don't know. Don't get me wrong. If Benavidez and Jacob fight, that'd be awesome too. I'm not saying that. It's just that 168, maybe it was the opponent he didn't get up for the last two times, but he didn't really look good at 168. But that's just my opinion. Now, Angelo Leo and Almeida fought to a competitive fight. I had it 6-4. For Leo, but it was competitive, like I mentioned. It was very competitive. Both of them were throwing and landing. I mean, Leo 211, Almeida 191, both of them over 600 punches. The body work for Leo, which we know is his bread and butter, 85-15. Even if that number is 85-30, we'll give him 15 more body shots. That's pretty dominant. What was it? One of them had a draw, 95-95, 96-94, 98-92. Like I said, I had it 6-4. Could a draw have happened? Sure. You know, maybe 7-3. I don't know. I was pretty comfortable with 6-4. I did think Leo started better with the body work mostly. Almeida did start to gather some steam in the end, close to the end of the second round. I thought he carried that over for the third and fourth. Close rounds, but I thought he did enough. And he was throwing pretty good combinations, especially in that fourth round. He had really good starts to many rounds, I'd have to say. Fifth round comes around, fifth and sixth, that quick little combos and plus the body work of Leo. I think it's actually Leo. It's not Leo Seneca. I think it's Leo. Either way, he won those rounds for me. And he was just a busier in spots. The seventh round, that was a close round. That's probably Almeida is what I gave it to. That was competitive, very competitive. The tenth round, good action round, I gave it to Almeida. So this was a good back and forth. You did see Angelo go in and out, you know, land some bodies, reset. Like I said, those quick little combos were good. So, yeah, he's going to be right back in the mix. Almeida a tier down, but still should be in the mix for good fights. But at 122, you know, whether that's Roman or whoever, I think you should put Leo in there back with someone solid again. Definitely. It was a good fight. Good action fight. Good, just solid performance. I think by both, but especially Leo. Now, Isaac Cruz and Francisco Vargas. Isaac Cruz has, you know, he has this weird thing where sometimes he looks pretty mediocre to just okay, and then explosive like he did on, was it the Charlo undercard? Was it the Charlo undercard? Or maybe it was the Leo Santa Cruz Gervonta. I can't remember, but he scored a quick little knockout. And he was taking on Francisco Vargas. This is just, you know, a guy way past his prime. You know, I'll say this, at least Vargas was boxing a lot more and moving. I know maybe people will not like that, you know, because the style of fight is normally the opposite, right? But I did like that he was doing that mostly, you know, because I don't want him to take that kind of damage. I'll be honest. Like, he's already given us so many wars. And, you know, it is what it is. You know what I mean? I the guy probably should be fighting, but I can't sit there and, you know, I mean, he made it all these rounds, right? What are you going to do? But he did land, you know, some decent shots, uppercuts. Like I said, I think both of them at times, gave us action, but it just wasn't that action of a fight. They were kind of falling in at times on the inside and kind of wrapping up each other, kind of tying up. Cruz was leading with his head multiple times, obviously, but like, dude, and he was jabbing, you know, moving, fighting behind the jab, taking steps to the side. But near the end of that fight, that cut was so damn nasty. It's like, really, you're going to let him go with his history, not just cuts, but just in general, dude. You're really going to let him go back into that fight? That cut was bad, dude. But I got to give it to Francisco, too. I mean, the guy, like I said, he mixed up his style even more than he normally does. So I respect that. I respect that, you know. And he realizes, hey, I can't keep taking all these punches. You know, so it's kind of back to the drawing board with Isaac Cruz, in my opinion. Wasn't a great performance. Wasn't as explosive as he wanted to be. But he probably didn't really think that Francisco Vargas was going to pivot and move and jab. And, I mean, he's always had a good jab. He's always circled his opponents. I shouldn't say always, but at times. You know, he's an inside fighter, but he's crafty. But he just went to the extreme for him anyway. So was it as bang-em, like a banger, as we thought going in? No, it wasn't. There was times where it was really sloppy. It was still good action, but Cruz, you know, would just fall in so much. He'd throw a punch, so a lot of times miss, and they'd be right shoulder to shoulder, so they'd tie up, you know. So, and like I said, leading with his head too. So kind of back to the drawing board, Isaac Cruz. We'll see where he goes. I mean, obviously, you know, at this point in his career, he still has plenty of options and stuff like that. I'm not saying it's super deep for PBC at 135 because it's not, but he's got options. He's got options because he's, you know, he doesn't have some kind of huge purse or anything like that. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that about wraps up that card. Yeah, I think that about wraps it up for Showtime. And I just saw the ratings. The ratings is the best rating that they've had since they've come back from the pandemic. Obviously, we don't know the streaming numbers. It's interesting to see at some point when someone asked Espinoza about streaming numbers. Because obviously, you know, ESPN doesn't release them. You know, Fox actually does once in a while. Because they have Fox Deportes, and they actually have released some streaming once in a while, but it's hard to judge off of Fox because it's free. Anybody, you can just get an antenna and you got it. You know, you don't need an antenna to get it. You could do it on the internet, free public stuff in your area. You know what I mean? You just download an app and boom, you have free TV. So it's tough. There's just so many things you could do without having to stream it on the Fox app, you know what I mean? Whereas I'd like to know ESPN Plus streams, and also, you know, just own streams. I mean, they've only released some of them, two or three of them, I think. So, it's interesting to see, you know, whether that means it's 50,000, 100,000. I'm not saying it's double. I have seen since the pandemic, you know, a lot more people watching on the app. That was where the trend was going anyway. As far as the OTT, off linear television, I think it was like 8% or 10%. Nielsen was going to start measuring them and releasing it. They delayed that a little bit from the pandemic, but I think it was 8%, an extra 8% viewership is what they labeled for boxing for that sport, which lined up with a lot of other sports if you look at it close anyway. So I don't know. And I've also seen someone have a poll on Twitter of if you're watching, you know, like Showtime, do you watch it on the app or do you watch it on normal, you know? It was a decent amount of people that voted for it, but it was like over 60% said the app. So, and I'm not trying to say, like I said, you know, times it by two with their lineal ratings or television ratings. I'm not saying that. I just want to know. At some point, someone's got to ask Espinoza that. Because it's interesting, you know, they had all those signups for that, you know, for that fight. So we'll see. Anyway, moving on. Inoue, you know, came back, knocked dude out, you know, did what he had to do. He had an opponent that was so below his level. It is what it is. That won't be the first time it's going to happen. Won't be the last. It's not the first. Won't be the last, right? And he did what you're supposed to do with those guys, and he destroyed them. Right? He destroyed him. Michaela Mayer, I thought, was in a good fight, competitive fight, some inside stuff. I thought she did pretty well. She had a good win, solid win. Isaac Dogbo and Adam Lopez is the one that I would really focus in on this one. And, you know, I got to say, like, the first two rounds were Dogbo. He was the aggressor. He was kind of darting in and out the way he does. I thought he had a good start in the third round, but Lopez, for me, was landing combinations, big combinations, in the midway point. And the fourth round, that's a close round because it seemed like Lopez was at range more, and he also was starting to increase his jab. So it could have been 2-2 after the first four. Dogbo put some rounds together in the fifth, sixth, left hand to the body and head especially. A competitive round, though. And then I gave Lopez the seventh and the eighth. in a lot of the closing rounds. I mean, I had it 5-5 or 6-4 Dogbo. Kind of matters how I scored the fourth. But you can make a case 7 through 10, that's 4 rounds out of a 10-round fight, that he closed better. He won all those rounds. Obviously, he closed better. But he started kind of Lopez behind that jab, started landing hooks and uppercuts on the move. And even in the eighth round, I do remember Dogbo landed. I got a little note, a huge uppercut. But I don't think that was enough to steal the round. Maybe some people did think that. I think Ward was talking about that. Somebody talked about that on the broadcast. But uppercuts and body work, back and forth. There was plenty of back and forth and little flurries and all that. Like the 10th round, Dogbo was landing harder. Then Lopez flurried back midway and landed great jab that snapped Dogbo's, neck, so he closed stronger, was my point. Dogbo landed less, 134 to 152, and threw less, 527 to 487. Both of them landed right around that 28-29%. Just barely got him on body, so it's really not body work. Really not even worth going into the numbers, but the scorecards read 95-95, 97-93, and 96-94 in favor of Dogbo. Like I said, I would have been just fine, with a draw there. You know what I mean? I'd have been just fine. I'd have been just fine with that. I thought it was a fun fight. Could have been. I don't know if I'd go either way. Maybe 6-4 Lopez. A lot of it does kind of depend on that fourth round, which way you went. But that's why I'm just kind of calling it a draw. You know what I mean? It was just kind of like, I'll take the draw. That about does that card. Moving over to the zone in the main event, obviously, Munguia, handled his, he did his job. That's for sure. First couple rounds, he was jabbing to the head and stomach. I thought he was jabbing to the stomach really, really well. They called him a Mexican superstar. Superstar, huh? To me, it's kind of funny. And I'm not trying to separate the zone or anything like that on this, because, this fanboy stuff sometimes. Like, we get it. You're going to talk about your fighters, but a superstar? Come on. That's like this weekend's fight when they say it's a title fight that's going to make, I think the commercial says something about 140. And it's like, I think we know who's on top at 140. Pretty sure we know who's on top at 140. But anyway, I did like how he jabbed to the stomach. I really like that. He did feature some upper body movement. He was really moving well that way. Obviously, his patented left hook to the body. He started throwing more in combination, started opening up. Even by the third round, he was throwing hooks and uppercuts left and right. I think it was an uppercut and a right hand that scored the knockout. I thought it was a solid, disciplined performance by Munguia. And when I say disciplined, he's going to get hit. But this dude, Cermeta, I don't know. This wasn't going to – I mean, he got him out, a round or two before Golovkin. So, that's something. There's your, measuring stick. But ever since he's been at 160, and I guess you could say just in general, maybe ever since that Hogan fight, which I actually thought he lost, but that was at a different weight class. He looks like he's growing into his body more, and he's just a really solid, I guess you could say, fundamentally offensive fighter. I know a lot of people think of fundamentals, Munguia gets hit too much. No, I'm talking about offense, though. He was very solid. Like I said, I really like that jab to the stomach. He will do these little crafty defensive moves that sometimes he'll kind of duck down and get hit. Sometimes he evades the punch. So, you know, Munguia, the thing is, it's like, what's he at now? 37-0 with 30 knockouts or something like that? It's like, all right, it's time to, like, step up. That's why I'm saying, like, if you look at his ranking in the WBO, I believe he should be in range for Andre. Like, why isn't Demetrius Andre and Jaime Munguia getting talked about? Now, that said, maybe Golden Boy wants to go someplace else. You know, and maybe they don't want that fight because stylistically it doesn't line up for it. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, he's within range for Charlo as well. Munguia is. So I just really wish Andre and Munguia would just fight because they're on the same platform. Now, I realize one's at Matchroom and one's at Golden Boy, but clearly Golden Boy's moving him. For a while, they're moving him just to fight Canelo, it seemed, or Golovkin. But remember, like, not that long ago, I mean, it was probably like four years now, but Munguia was like the California Athletic Association, right? Or commission. They wouldn't allow Munguia to fight at 160 at the time. Or fight Golovkin, anyway. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just want him to get a big fight. The Gabriel Zotto fight is a nice step up. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, what he just did in the ring, right, for Rosado. The first round, what's his name? It's like Melkupsiev. You know, this guy is just a body-punching machine. Another type of fighter that a fair amount of people, you know, were kind of like hyping up because, you know, anyone basically from not America, they're going to hype up. And I'm not trying to take it out on this guy or nothing like that. I mean, definitely not trying to do that. Because, you know, he came in, dude, he has some swag to him, his footwork, and just coming in with the risky business. I just Google that if you don't know what I'm talking about. The risky biscuit. Risky business, Tom Cruise shades. When he came in there, he came like a little swagged out, right? But yeah, I mean, Uzbekistan, you know. And technically, Uzbekistan isn't Eastern European, is it? It's more Asian involved. But Uzbekistan, Ukraine, obviously Russia, these are the guys that phenomenal dudes, you know, in the amateurs. And some of them can carry it over, you know. But we did that U.S. segment. We keep hearing about these guys and the takeover. But, you know, we're just wondering when it's going to happen. And, you know, don't get mad at me because I'm saying this. Some of this is just for fun. But then again, when your freaking timeline is, like, full of that, it's kind of like, well, okay, cool, man. But, like, just because they did great in the amateurs doesn't mean you're going to be a world champ, you know? But he was looking like a world champ earlier. Obviously, landing hooks to the body. That's what he loves to do. And the head. I mean, he had Gabe, you know, take a knee. That's for damn sure. He definitely had Gabe, you know, taking a knee. Early on, I think it was like the last 10 seconds. It was like a right hand to the head and I think a body shot in the last 10 seconds or so. So, you know, it is like he had a good start. He had a good start. What is it? I keep forgetting his name. Melakupzias, something like that. And he kept bringing that body shots, and then he started landing some straight left hands to the head. He's a little robotic with his left hand. It seems like you can just tell he's setting it up, just like, okay, boom, you know. So he's kind of telegraphing his shots. And obviously that right hand, that short right hand, straight right hand landed at the 144 mark of the third, and it was curtains, completely curtains for Melakupzias, something like that. Like I said, this dude kind of came in, swagged out, risky business. I know John's going to know what I say with the risky business shades from Tom Cruise. He was, like I said, I give him credit, the dude, for being like this amateur, you know, pedigree guy. He definitely fights like a pro, you know what I mean? I mean, he definitely is like, nah, dude, I'm trying to get you out, trying to go to the body. We'll see. He's got that fancy footwork. We'll see if that's just a mirage or he just got caught with a punch right here. It's early in the fight. But some of the flaws he had, you could kind of see that something like this is going to happen. But let's slow down, because I would have never thought Gabe would have done this. And I don't think he thought that, because his reaction where he took those little baby steps, that made my night. That made my night because of how excited it pumped up. It just like, oh, you know, it was awesome. It was awesome. So Rosado, Munguia, hey, if you can't make the Andre fight for Munguia, let's do that. Rosado, you know, okay. What will that mean for him ultimately with the win? It looks good right now, right, because of what Gabe's coming off of. And most people, I shouldn't say most people, but plenty of people thought he beat Jacobs. Did that fight exist? I've burnt that fight in my brain. I burned it, and it's never come back. I don't even remember that fight. Who fought? I don't even remember. It was one of those fights. Blair Cobb and Brad Sullivan. Cobb kind of came out with his hard combinations for the first couple rounds. Sullivan, you know, third round did land some flush shots in there. I think it was a left hook that he landed that was starting to do some stuff. Good work to the body and head in the fourth. Then this looping right hand. And it seems like Cobb is a looper. Like he's trying to knock you out. Kind of like a KO flurry after like a hard left hook, if I remember correctly, that stopped it in the fifth round. So Blair Cobb's experience lives on. He's a funny dude. We'll see where this goes, but you know he's trying to brute you out of there. The Zamara and Esparza fight, though, that was a fun fight, dude. Zamara got off to a really good start. She knocked her down with like 30 seconds left. I think it was two right hands. I think it was a right hand. And to me, Barza was winning that round. And then I thought she slowly but surely took over the fight, Esparza. Not that Zamora didn't. I mean, I had her winning the fourth round. Her left hook and right hand was on point. The ninth round was really, really close, back and forth round. So there just wasn't many more rounds, you know. Even the eighth round, I thought she bounced back from starting to get clearly beat. So I give her credit for that one, too. So it was a competitive fight. I just think that Esparza kind of got back on her landing better shots. Some of it was like short shots and a pivot. Some of it was just like a lead right hand, lead left hooks. She was just kind of, you know, circling, pivoting, jab, right hand. Like she was just fundamentally kind of breaking her down, quick jab, quick combos and out. You know what I mean? It was kind of crazy, though. In the ninth round when she came back, she started celebrating like the fight was over. Corner lifted her up. And the way she got lifted up, the guy kind of grabbed her in her corner, not just some random guy. The corner grabbed her by the stomach, and after that, I don't know if she was kind of out of breath or kind of just mentally trying to get back, like, oh, shit, the fight's still on. I got to get my mind right. I'm not sure what it was, but it was like, whoa, hold on. But there was a 95, 94, 96, 94, and 97, 92. I had Esparza winning. But that was a good fight, man. As far as back and forth competitive and lasting the whole time, that was probably the best fight on the card, I'd have to say. Obviously, you know, Gabe Rosado, that fight had a, you know, I guess a better ending or whatever, you know what I mean? But yeah, shouts out to Zamora and Esparza. That was a good fight. That was a very good fight. So that about wraps up my portion of the recap. I'm going to go ahead and bring in John now and get his take from the week. And we're also going to get into Gervonta Davis versus Mario Barrios, the co-main, Erickson Lubin versus Jason Rosario, obviously Lomachenko and Nakatashi. I actually thought this was on ESPN. It's on ESPN Plus. Maybe that's a little better because they're kind of like, ah, we're over here. We're probably not going to be the most popular fight, but we're over here. I think it's a good fight, though, coming back. If you look at coming back, you know what I mean? And obviously we have a prospect-driven card with the PBC on Fox returning to my neck of the woods. In Minneapolis at the Armory. Anybody from Minnesota listening and wants to wait on tickets, I probably wouldn't do that. It's Tuesday now. I see like the club level is actually sold out. I don't believe it's only one fight that they actually sold all those club level tickets. So, because it's like, I think it seats like 8 to 10 people. Like you get these little VIP club area like couches. And the bar's really close. I think you actually have, like, a cocktail server anyway. But the bar's right there. And it's just comfy. And you can stand right over the railing. And it's a great view. Nothing in your way. But, you know, if you're a casual fan, and let's be honest, there's no Truax or James. They're trying to get Morrell, you know, in that main event spot for the Armory so he can keep that going, too, to add another fighter that can match there, because obviously Truax is, you know, nearing the end, obviously. Supposedly he was supposed to get that Chavez Jr. fight. That's what he was saying on Twitter, but they bailed out. But yeah, those are $100 a pop to sit up there. And like I said, this isn't some kind of big fight. So $100 for a casual fan, I think people are just so pumped to get out there, you know what I mean? And this is the first Armory show in a long, long time. And the last show was a Cuban-themed show, now that I think about it. That's right, that was because it didn't, 2020 April didn't happen. So, and there was a fair amount of Cubans out there, Cuban against Mexico, because remember it was Arislandi Lara against Canelo's brother. But also, like, I think it was Frank Sanchez and Morrell and whatnot. Anyway, that's going on as well. Like I said, definitely a prospect-driven triple header on Fox. The FS1 fights, I have some interest in those too. I'm not, you know, this week's going to be strange for me because I'm literally covering, the Saturday night fights, then I'm covering the Sunday night fights, and then I'm leaving for a couple days out of town. So I'm not sure if I'm going to do a show on Sunday during the day or late night when I get home after the fights. I really don't know. Anyway, long story short, I don't know why I'm rambling like this. Let's bring in John into the fold and see what's going on with him. What's going on, John? How you doing, man?
Hey, Chris. Great to be here as always. And we have a lot to talk about this week. So gonna be entertaining talking about all the action last week and what we've got coming up this week that you've already gotten started.
So, you know, last week we spoke of the undercard fights, which a couple of them did pop off and were competitive or at least entertaining. We were hoping one of these main events, we're hoping all of them, but we knew that they were, you know, not great matchups, obviously, right? We know that, especially Inoue, you knew that was going to be a short night. Munguia made it a short night. I thought he looked good. But we did get a competitive, what we used to call a good TV fight. You know, for years, Top Rank was good at this, where it's like, well, you know who's going to win the fight, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to get there, you know. And Montiel, John, even when he looked wobbled, somehow he'd land a big punch back. There were some moments where he wasn't punching back that I thought, oh, dude, don't get TKO'd, man. You're fighting too good in this one. His awkward style. What'd you think of Charlo and Montiel? And Charlo had a lot of respect for Montiel after this fight. You could tell in the post-presser. What'd you think of the fight? And then we'll get into some of the undercard action as well.
Well, I think, except for the fact that Charlo didn't end up stopping him in the end, I felt like I had a, especially when you considered the odds on this fight for were very wide, I think this was one I did have a pretty good read going into, because I understood the way the odds were, what they were. But, you know, Montiel, you know, had youth on his side. He had good size for the weight class. You know, he's even bigger than Charlo, even though he moved up from welterweight, but he is bigger now. And he's got power. So, you know, to me, there's different levels of fights that might appear to be with a fighter as, you know, on one side of it who has little or even in the no-hoper class, where, you know, it's a little different when the guy's got attributes like youth and power. You know, if a guy's older or a fighter has no power and you know, he's kind of in that no-hoper B-side position, there's really not much it brings to the table. And, you know, you saw that in the Inouye fight with Tass Marinus, which was pretty much a joke, as good as Inouye is. But getting back to the Charlo fight, so, you know, I think you made a good point, Chris. You know, Montiel bringing that power, and he's got size, and he's actually younger than Charlo. You know, Charlo had to watch out for him at points. I thought as tough as Montiel hung in there, one thing he didn't do that I actually thought it would have been interesting for him to try, even though he might have ended up getting stopped, is since he does have good power, you know, he kind of didn't set himself and really try to unload on, you know, Charlo that much or get Charlo backing up. I thought he might do a little bit more of that, but, you know, credit to him and landing some good shots, landing some good body shots, you know, doing a little bit of damage to Charlo and, you know, going the 12. You know, it was no doubt Charlo won the fight, but, you know, Montiel hung in there competitively, even though he was losing the round. So, you know, I thought I had the beat on that Montiel brought more than a lot of people were giving him credit for, despite the odds, and I didn't pick him to win. He didn't win. And I thought Charlo would, because I have a lot of faith in Jermall Charlo, would ultimately get the KO. He didn't, but, you know, I tweeted out the next day, I believe it was, after the fight, that I've kind of learned from with Jermall Charlo, who I am a big believer in, I kind of learned from the Brandon Adams fight. I mean, I was critical after he let Adams go the distance in kind of a boring fight, but, you know, that Adams victory has aged well. I mean, Adams was on a good roll before he fought Charlo, including a win over Petrov in that revived contender series, and, you know, he picked up a couple of nice KO wins after that, the last one, you know, being the biggest, you know, over an undefeated Ukrainian prospect who a lot of people had high hopes for. So, you know, that Adams victory for Charlo aged really well. I mean, I think Adams is, you know, I think really even that 154 pounds or even middleweight, if he was back up there, I mean, he's a guy threatening to crack the legit top 10, be a minor threat. And that win looks pretty good for Charlo. Why I say that is I think that's the way this Montiel victory is going to age for Charlo. I think Montiel is going to end up becoming a legit middleweight contender and, you know, a legit top 10 guy.
He'd be a good fight, not to break it up, but he'd be a good fight for Munguia.
Well, now, Munguia stopped him when they fought at welterweight early. But, you know,
right.
I think Montiel.
But I'm saying, you know, yeah.
I think Montiel, you know, some is better now. You know, Munguia has been working on his craft, but I think Montiel, you know, is better. He seems to be better at middleweight. But, you know, that is, you know, you think of that, Somebody else had thrown one out there that would be good for Montiel that I thought was a good suggestion. It's kind of flipping my mind. But, yeah, I think, you know, a middleweight, you know, he's proved he belongs in middleweight contender fights. And, you know, he'll probably pull out a win in one of those along the way. So I think he's going to be around for a while. Again, this is not a case like where Montiel was some 35-year-old veteran who was in for a paycheck and, you know, just fell down and he's going nowhere in the future. This is a guy that I think, you know, he's awkward, yes, but I think he's got a future because he's got that power and he's got good size. So I think he's going to be around in the middleweight division for a while. So, you know, Charlo was catching a lot of criticism the next day, I thought, really more than he should have gotten. I mean, yes, I would have liked to see him get the KO in that type of a fight. I'm a believer in his abilities like that. But, you know, he was a little over the weight before the fight started, probably wasn't in his best shape. And, you know, he had a guy that came to fight and, like I said, has attributes that I think the guy is going to have a future. So I think it's a victory that's going to age well. You know, he and Golovkin are clearly the one and two middleweights. I know, obviously, there's big promotional hurdles and separation there in TV deals. I think at least as fans, writers, broadcasters, hardcore fans, I think there's a duty to clamor for that fight at least. I don't see enough of it. I think you can be honest about the promotional limitations so you're not pie in the sky and kidding yourself. I think it's always good to qualify it, but I think everyone that follows the sport should at least be calling that fight. I mean, one thing I think you do have to say that speaks for itself is, look, Charlo just fought Montiel and Golovkin's last fight was Sheremeta, and they're the one and two guys in the division. If that doesn't tell you that they need to fight, what else does? And Golovkin's made it a big thing that he stayed at middleweight for his entire career. Well, you know, if that's your big thing and your number one threat, you're the one number one guy and this is the number two guy, that's who you should be fighting. You know, you're talking about your legacy. You're a one division guy. I mean, so I'd like to see that fight called for more.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I was talking earlier that it would seem like Danny Jacobs is just a fight that makes sense because, you know, his contract has expired with DAZN. He already has a good relations with Al Haymon. And it does kind of – first of all, he didn't look good at 168. But not only that, but, like, it seems like he is the type of guy that, especially at this point in his career – that he needs an opponent to get him up, and I think that would be an interesting opponent to get him up. But we'll see how that goes. And then as far as the undercard fight, you know, it was kind of underwhelming and less action-packed than I thought, thinking of Isaac Cruz and Francisco Vargas. But that Angelo Leo, who I thought won the fight cleanly, but it was a competitive fight, I really liked that fight even better. I thought that was a little bit more competitive, more two-way the whole time.
Yeah, I agree with you. That did end up being a little bit of a better fight. Leo fought well again. Now, he's had, you know, of course, he fell short against Fulton, no shame in that, but he's had some good fights in recent years, and he had another good one Saturday night against Alameda. I thought he won the fight, fought very well. I agree it was a good fight. And he, you know, at 122, he's increased his status again with that win. So that was a good win for Leo, and I did like the fight. I thought he had enough to win that, and he did win that, and I like that fight as well. Isaac Cruz, I really enjoy watching him fight. I like him. He clearly won the fight. You know, he even for lightweight, he's short, and he was having a little bit of trouble with that, with Vargas. You know, he was unloading those hard combinations, but it just seemed like with his height, his delivery system was having a little trouble, you know, landing those as cleanly. You know, Vargas obviously is not a good defender. And matter of fact, I don't like to use punch stats much, but once in a while they work. And I think punch stat wise, he has one of the two worst defenses in boxing, you know, out of anybody at the world-class level. So, you know, that's a stat I could believe with him. So, you know, Cruz having trouble landing clean on him because, you know, Cruz has got the power that, you know, and he throws in some nice combinations. If he lands, you're going to go. But, you know, even Vargas is defensively challenged, and he's, you know, in his mid-30s now on the other side of the hill, and Cruz is having trouble landing those quad shots clean. He cleanly won the fight. I think he proved he's a legit top 10 guy. And when I say legit top 10, you know, I'm talking about like transnational, something like that, or if you want to look at the ring. So, you know, not alphabet stuff. So just in case anybody wonders when I keep using that phrase, that's what I mean. And I think you have to use that phrase to be clear because the alphabet top 10s are meaningless. So I think Cruz is legit top 10 at lightweight now. You know, solid win, but I'm with you. Fighting a defensively challenged guy, I would have liked to seen him cleaner, you know, land cleaner. I like the guy, but got me a little bit concerned that, you know, he fights anybody better than Vargas with a bit of size. I don't think he's going to get knocked out or anything like that, but it looks like he's got trouble landing. And you know, what he kind of is missing is, you know, when you see guys like his height, you know, anybody who gets to that real low height for a certain division, I mean, the guys, that's where you got to look at the great Joe Frazier and, you know, Rocky Marciano, of course, as well. You know, these were the models for, like, shorter guys at heavyweight, even though you don't see many people doing that because of the difficulty and, you know, the punishment you got to take when you're a shorter guy coming in like that. You don't see as much. That's still, though, to be effective when you're short for a division like that. That's usually the way it's got to be. And, you know, Cruz, like, in other words, he doesn't really bob and weave on his way in and then have a sophisticated body attack, even though he's a good puncher. You know, he loads up with those good combinations, but he's not that accurate with them, fighting guys that are taller or, you know, trying to frustrate him. So, That's kind of my analysis on him. I like the guy, but I can see where there might be some difficulties coming up.
Yeah, you're right. It's like it almost needs to be like at the top level anyway, like a perfect style matchup or just certain body type. I don't know. It is kind of like he's got to go back to his drawing board, but when he gets there, he's going to be like, well, there's certain things that I'm not going to be able to – it doesn't matter – you know, what I do here at the drawing board, there's just certain things that it's not going to look good or it won't. I don't know. It's hard to describe, but I don't know. He just, ever since he had that early knockout, people are just like, this dude's the best. He's going to knock out everybody. And then it's like, well, let's just see him, you know, continue to go. I think he's got a lot of power. There should be, you know, something to him, no doubt about it. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. Switching over to the, obviously not much there out of the Inoue fight, but the Isaac Dogbo, Adam Lopez, turned out to be pretty good, kind of like we thought there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that one ended up being kind of exactly like we thought. It was a good fight, extremely tight. I thought Lopez did enough to win it, but it was one where I could see a draw or Dogbo getting a close decision. So, you know, both guys fought well. I thought, you know, Dogbe, even though I thought Lopez edged the fight, I mean, Dogbe was kind of rejuvenated. I mean, he showed he's got something left after those Navarrete losses. And so I think, you know, we were starting to sense that already, and I think that performance by Dogbe against Lopez confirmed that Navarrete is that good. So to me, Dogbe showed he's a legit top 10 featherweight. Even if you thought, and I thought Lopez won, but, you know, Lopez is a solid guy. You know, he got the bad stoppage loss against Valdez where he dropped Valdez, you know, lost to Fulton and was in this fight that could have gone either way with Dogbe. That's no shame. And he's trained by Buddy McGirt, you know, one of the top strategists in the game, top trainer. So, you know, even with those three losses, he's still formidable. I mean, he's not done. And I thought Dogbe was very spirited and showed he's still got something left. And, you know, it's funny, speaking of Cruz, you know, Dogbe is another one of those guys that, you know, for his weight class is very short for his weight class. So he's another one of those guys that has to have a certain style. He has to make sure he's fighting in a certain style to be effective. And you saw him kind of working that at different times against Lopez. Now he looked about to go a couple times when Lopez was able to back him up and land those hard uppercuts. But I got to give Dogbay some credit, even though he was better in the early rounds, he was able to hang on in those late rounds by, you know, he would throw bombs. You know he was doing what he needed to do to survive before he could get back into more of a mode where he's able to move forward and do better. And, you know, I thought both guys actually performed well. You know, Lopez, seen quite a bit of him over the years too. And it was more early for him in this fight, but also at the start of the final round, he's got moments where he just doesn't throw enough punches, and that, and not being a huge puncher, he's a decent puncher, are kind of his weak spots. And that's probably what made it close enough that they were able to give Dogbay the decision. But, you know, one judge had a draw, two for Dogbay. I thought Lopez edged it out like Andre Ward did. So, good, you know, pretty good performance by both men. I think both men move forward in that fight. But, you know, you mentioned the Inoue, and, you know, Inoue, I always give points to somebody, like, for doing what Inoue did, getting rid of somebody who's overmatched early, you know, and making it look good. I give points there. You know, I'm not a person that doesn't give points there. So I've said that many times over the years, and I give Inoue points for that. But now that we've got that out of the way, the props he was getting for getting rid of, you know, just an opponent who didn't even belong there. He's not in anybody's legit top 10. And, you know, it was really pathetic, really. I mean, the guy looked, you know, was afraid to throw anything with any authority the little time he was there. And it was just another joke mandatory. And these people that buy into these quote-unquote mandatory defenses, which, you know, we don't need in a way to have an alphabet belt and defend against this guy to know what he is. So, you know, mandatory is just an alphabet and TV network selling point. I mean, there was nothing mandatory about Inoue having to fight this Gasmarinas guy. You know, I don't care what anybody wants to tell me about alphabet mandatory defense. And, you know, the boxing hipster community then went berserk with accolades for Inoue when really, frankly, on a fight like this, the focus should have been more on what the hell is Inoue fighting this guy for? Enough of that. I mean, when fighters were fighting, then they say, well, in the old days, when fighters were fighting five times a year, we could justify slipping in an Inoue Gasmarinas guy, you know, fight, but not the way boxing works in 2021. No more of that. I mean, no more of that stuff. And, you know, I'm not saying Charlo couldn't have had a better opponent than Montiel, but I did say that before the fight. I'm not saying this in hindsight. Montiel had attributes, and I think he's got a future. Gasmarinas does not have threatening attributes, and I don't expect to see him in anybody's top 10 at any time. Now we're in the
future.
Yeah,
I think that's right. Yeah, yeah. There is a difference. And, you know, it is what it is. It's an unfortunate thing that, you know, some of these, I mean, all you got to do, once you get a belt, you're out of the other rankings. And, you know, it's just the rankings and a lot. Now, some rankings are really good, and you're like, oh, wow, that's pretty good. But, you know, a lot of it has to do with, well, there's a bunch of, you know, there's either a bunch of guys at the PBC in that weight class or at the top rank at 130, or, you know, then you go, well, yeah, they're rankings because they think those fights can actually be made. But overall, the rankings a lot of times can just be garbage, man, and that's the problem. Once you get a belt, you're pretty much excluded from the other sanctioning rankings. So it kind of just takes out the whole thing of it. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, exactly. I mean, that's what a lot of these people don't even understand. I mean, it's a farce on its face because the alphabets don't rank each other's champions. So it's a farce on its face. I mean, there's no point to it whatsoever. Mandatory, it's not even a guy that is a belt holder of another sanctioning body, and there's a million belts. I mean, I will keep saying it. I'll never stop saying it. I mean, the alphabet's got to be ignored. You know, look at Transnational or the Ring. And the Ring is owned by a promoter, so you know they've tried to avoid the conflict. I mean, that's been the idea. I have mixed emotions on that. I like seeing the magazine survive in the tradition, but you know, there's right. a built-in conflict. So you know, Transnational, like you know, I'm on here with you a lot, and you know, you have Jake Donovan, he's on there. Nothing's perfect, but I'm just saying you gotta have some standard. And you really can't. I'll argue this with anybody, and I always do on Twitter or wherever, anywhere else. I mean, you got to ignore the alphabets. I mean, one thing we've lost – see, I'll get on a rant. Now, one thing we've lost over the years that is bad, I mean, that doesn't mean everything old was good, but one thing we have lost is, you know, you had writers ridiculing the alphabets, you know, not writing in their articles – that like these things were serious, you know, you make a brief mention, but you also give clarity to the picture. You know, you had boxing writers just ridiculing these quote unquote mandatory alphabet challengers. Now you've got people propping this stuff up. It's idiotic, you know, making themselves look like fools, frankly, just for trying to prop it up and make it seem, you know, legitimate. I mean, and it ties into what we're running into this week. I mean, you know, the issue with Tank Davis isn't that WBA regular shouldn't matter, but WBA super should. It's that neither of them matter. That's the issue. So, you know, when people start going crazy about Tank Davis with this WBA regular thing, WBA regular doesn't matter, but WBA, WBC, IBF don't matter either. I mean, it's about being the true, you know, best guy in the division where, you know, you get recognized by like the Ring, Transnational, or to pick up a lineal title. I mean, that's boxing tradition, you know, not this alphabet nonsense. So, in other words, the criticism of, you know, if you want to criticize this Tank Davis 140 WBA regular with Barrios is not that the WBA title matters and the regular doesn't. Neither of them matter. I mean, it's all a joke. It's the same organization. So, you know, there is no four belt error. I mean, I do see some people tweeting that at least to have sanity, in my opinion, you know, like they started using this term recently, the four belt error. What's the four belt error? I mean, this is just, you know, it's just you just disregard all this stuff. I like when Steven Espinosa told the truth, even though now Showtime's doing it a lot. But I'm just saying, at least he knows. He said it's just a marketing tool. I mean, that's the only reason these things are surviving and around. You know, PBC was going to get away from it. They went without it for like a year, and they changed course. I hated to see that, but I'm still hopeful that someday that you know they don't need to you know they don't need this as a marketing tool. So that's my rant for the night.
Well, there we go. You're right. It's 100% a marketing tool, and casual or even just hardly casual fans, when they hear a title fight, okay, well, okay, cool. You know, like, it sucks, man. It does suck. Now, Munguia, I got to say, Munguia had a solid, for him, discipline performance. You know, offensively, I liked what I saw. What'd you think of Munguia? And then, you know, we can touch on some of these undercard fights. Obviously, Gabe got the big knockout. Zamora and Esparza was a good fight. What'd you think of the DAZN card? We'll start with Jaime Munguia.
Yeah, I think, you know, I threw the gauntlet down on Twitter because I've been a Munguia believer. And, you know, I've mentioned it, you know, when you and I have talked a lot before. So, you know, I was saying I needed this one to be easy for him and impressive. It was just at that point because Sheremeta was awful against Golovkin. You know, I'd said that, and you know, he showed nothing again against Munguia. He's got no pop, and he's not even that skilled, but he's got no pop whatsoever. So, you know, it was a fight Munguia had to look at. I agree with what everybody's seeing. You know, He did the discipline. You see him doing a more conventional offense, and and following the game plan like that. I think he did enough for me that I'm certainly not going to lose my belief in him. I've been a believer from the beginning, so I'm not going to get off the bandwagon when he got rid of Sharameta in the first half of the fight like that. But you know, there were still things that he did when he was just trained by his father that I actually liked. I mean, his left hook's his best punch, and you know, when he was with his father, you know, he would crank up the left hook and he would just devastate guys with that left hook. And you know, he's got good size. He was a welterweight, 154. Now he's a middle, but he's so big. He's got good size. He looked huge in there in a good way. He's got good size for all these weight classes. He's still young. He's made a lot of, you know, technical improvement, which a lot of people like to see. And I'm not down on it. I think it's something good to fall back on. But I still think he's maybe needs to get back to some of the things he used to do that are him at his best. Like, his right hand's definitely not as – he knocked out Montiel with a right hand, but his right hand's not as good as his left hook. I mean, I could see that in that Sharameta fight. You know, he's been a little more reliant lately, and it's not as good as his left hook to me. You know, he throws that uppercut sometimes. That uppercut is hard, and you know, he's got a good body attack when he used it. You know, he is being tighter on the defense and things, but I don't know. I think these could be some good tools in the toolbox, but I'd still like to get him back, get him to get back to being a little more aggressive, you know, and just a little more, actually a little more reliant on that left hook because it's such a good punch for him. And using his size, you know, really bullying guys. Like, you know, I'd like to see him real aggressive, cranking up that left hook, you know, pushing people back. You know, especially like, you know, to me, you got to adjust a little bit with the competition. I mean, I know he's working on things, but, you know, Sharameta can't hurt you, you know. So, you know, when he was with the tight defense and things, I was thinking, bomb this guy out of there. You know, he didn't end up dropping him. And, you know, Golovkin did drop him repeatedly. Let's be fair and remember that when Golovkin fought him. I mean, he took him one more round, but he was dropping the guy right from the outset. So I saw enough to remain a believer. I see what they're working on. I mean, Morales is doing a nice job with him working on some stuff, but I want to see a little more free-flowing aggression from him. I still think he's better that way. I'll still say it now. So, and I think you got to adjust your game to the opponent somewhat. Like, even though he might have been overmatched, like, Montiel can punch. So, you know, Charlo had to watch that. And, you know, Munguia was already able to stop a guy, TL himself, in two rounds with his aggressive style. So, just saying, and that is a puncher, but just saying Sharameta is not a puncher. So, you know, this is not really the guy to be, cautious with to me, you know. So I still think he's on track. I like him, but to me, still some things to keep in mind that when the competition is better, I think he needs to be more aggressive and get back to that left hook more.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I do think he offensively he's pretty accurate when he does whip his shots. It's, you know, he's got some speed to him, and like you said, that left hook to the body. He's you know, I just want to see him in there with somebody. It looks like they're going to match him with Gabe, who scored the knockout. Any other fights you want to discuss on that before we start to get into the Gervonta Davis and Mario Barrios stuff?
I'll touch on, yeah, since you mentioned it, you know, Gabe Rosado, great win. When you're ranking the 17 weight classes, 168 is not deep. He legitimately, with a close performance against Jacobs, which a fight that could have gone either way, even though it wasn't exciting. And he's had a lot of other close fights, you know. You know, he had that fight where him and Slewecki knocked each other down, and I thought he should have gotten the decision against Martin Murray. So he's actually in that division with this big win. He's cracked a legit top 10. He got off to a rough start in that fight too, but, you know, he hung in there. I was wondering if he was going to hang in, you know, like you had mentioned, he was down early, but, he hung in there and landed a bomb, and he's not a puncher. You know, he's not historically a puncher. So, Beck the Bully got seriously set back, and, you know, it is also worth mentioning, DAZN totally ignored it. You know, Beck having the steroid history, you know, that's come out, going back to his amateur days. And, you know, just totally ignored it and gave the guy a free pass. We really can't have that in the sport. You know, you're still promoting the guy, but you got to have some journalistic integrity. I mean, to just ignore that, you know, when Moore has come out with that recently, and just because it was, not attached to his pro career. You know, he had what, 7 pro fights. You know, you can't just ignore that. You want to have as clean a sport as possible. You can't give the guy a free pass on that. So, for that reason, it was extra special that Rosado knocked him out early with a highlight reel KO. So, but I don't think the Zone had any business giving him a free pass on that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's really fair. That is, I'm glad you brought that up, because I forgot to. I even put it in my little notes under my scorecard, and I just forgot to mention that they didn't even really say it. They were so, you know, in love with his body punching and his footwork, I guess, that they didn't want to get in the way of that, you know what I mean? All right, so we have some fights coming up this weekend. Gervonta Davis, Mario Barrios. Moving from 130 to 140, as we know, Tank didn't really look good power-wise at 35. Now, some of that could have been preparation, as I spoke earlier. But, you know, 140, we really don't know where his power is at 140 at all. We do know, you know, Barrios has some holes in his game, but he's a legit top 10 guy with power. I mean, that's one thing he does have. The co-main, Erickson Lubin, is stepping up against Jason Rosario, which I really like that fight. And also Vasily Lomachenko returning against Nakatani, which is not an easy fight, especially coming off such a, you know, a fair amount of a layoff anyway, and coming off a loss like that. So I do like that fight, that, you know, he's going to have to get on the inside of Nakatani. So that's on ESPN Plus. Let's talk about this Showtime pay-per-view first, and then we'll go to Lomachenko. What do you think of Davis and Barrios and Lubin and Rosario?
You know, you made a good point about let's kind of set the scene. You made a good point about Barrios, as I was just talking about Montiel. You know, in perspective, Barrios is a better fighter than Montiel, but fits that criteria, you know, that I'm talking about. Good size, youth, good power. So, you know, when this fight was signed, you look at that, he's a dangerous opponent. You know, of course, Gervonta Davis is the favorite, but he's a dangerous opponent. One thing that I find that always helps me analyze, especially these types of fights, I'll use it for all of them, but especially in these types of fights, is I always break it down as if there were only 8 or 9 weight classes, one champ of division, where would the guy stand? And it helps me put it more in perspective as to what we're really looking at and what the risks are, how it should play out. So, you know, if there were 8 or 9 divisions, one champ of division, you know, Gervonta Davis would be, you know, right at the top of the lightweight division. You know, he'd be ranked, you know, 1 or 2, he'd be right there. So, you know, cause then it gives you perspective, like, you know, Roberto Duran was the lightweight champion before, you know, he moved up and started fighting at welterweight. So Davis hasn't achieved that status, but he is at the top of the lightweight division. So, you know, Barrios, if there was 8 or 9 weight classes, you know, he's a welterweight, you know, that's a tough division. Now with the 17 weight classes with the 140, right, he scrapes into the top 10 legitimately, but if he'd be a good prospect threatening maybe to crack into the top 10 at welterweight. So when I break it down that way, that's when I first say, so this is not, it's a good fight. I like the fight, and it is, you know, presents some risk for Davis, but it's not, it helps you get the perspective that it's not an enormous risk. In other words, you know, the number one lightweight going up to fight a guy who has, you know, at welterweight, who's not in really in the top 10 in the division, it's obviously a winnable fight, but things like you said, it's also legit when you analyze it that way. You know, Davis truly, and especially because he had fought at 130 pounds, you know, he really is basically moving up a true weight class. Now, the fight, you know, they got to be under 140, so it's not like he's got to fight Barrios at 147 or something like that. But, you know, it's basically the equivalent of moving up a weight class, and that's when I start looking at it. I don't look at the, you know, when you're just moving up 4 pounds from 126 to 130. People, to me, overrate all that stuff. When you're moving up one weight class, that's when you do have to say, okay, is the power going to translate? You know, is the size going to translate? Those types of things. So that'll be interesting. I think with Davis, it will. At this age he's at now, you know, I've said with him a lot of times, I think he's got a window with his style and size where he's got to make a quick move, which is now. I mean, I think he's in his prime years with his style where it's got to start happening now. And I think what you're going to see happen is, I've been saying this, then I saw a tweet this week. A lot of people questioned me on it, but Kevin Cunningham apparently and Buddy McGirt are saying the same thing this week, that this is the stepping stone, you know, for Davis. He's going to be at welterweight with that big money, whether people want to believe that or not. It's going to happen. He's got to get by this test, though, you know. And then we got to see how the power, the size translate out against a guy like Barrios, who's got good size, be fighting him at 140 instead of 147. But if he passes this test with, you know, flying colors, looks good, he's going to put himself in that PBC welterweight mix. I can almost guarantee you that. So I don't think people will question it as much after they see him against Barrios and if he performs like I think he can. But Barrios is no slouch. It's a real test. I think, you know, Barrios can win. I mean, I think Davis will win. I think you're right about the Gamboa thing at 135. I don't think that's a weight thing. That was just a preparation thing. But it's not a guarantee that he's going to hurt a guy like Barrios. We're going to have to see that. So I'm still not totally decided if this is going to be a decision for Davis or a KO. I do think Davis is going to win, but I don't see this as a fight that Barrios can't win. I mean, I'm in the camp that it's a good fight. He's got a chance. It's enough of a risk. I mean, it's enough of a risk there that Barrios is good enough. I mean, he is a real live underdog in this fight. But I think Davis should win it. I'm really looking at it then, you know, does he win it in spectacular or convincing enough fashion to really sell his welterweight debut, which I think is coming soon. And I think he's got to make his big moves now. I think he's at the age where with his style, he's got to do it. But look, even though there's only, you know, there's one or not many Manny Pacquiao's out there, arguably only one. I mean, Manny Pacquiao is a flyweight. Now, he's the exception. But again, before we get crazy that Davis can't do any of this, I mean, there's people thinking Manny Pacquiao has a good chance against Errol Spence in his early 40s at welterweight, and he started out as a flyweight. So it can, you know, it can be done. Stop all the clutching your pearls, fans out there. Davis comes through on this one. He's gonna be at welterweight before you know it.
Yeah, that'd be crazy if he went to welterweight and took on some of those guys, man. Because that's those are where the great B sides for him would be. But wow, that'd be pretty intense, and that would get people talking. That is
exactly
for sure about, oh, dude, he's going to get stopped or, you know, all that.
Yeah, and let's look at the potential, though. When people, sometimes they don't look at all the potential, even big fight matchups. Look, whether they like it or not, Mikey Garcia is at welterweight, and he's been appearing, again, as an announcer on PBC fights. Now, you think PBC's got Mikey Garcia appearing as an announcer on the fights lately because he's going to go take another DAZN fight? I don't think that's likely. So, you know, that's certainly not any kind of size disadvantage. And Mikey Garcia is a top fighter. Some people don't like him for some reason, but, you know, he's a legit welterweight top 10 guy right now himself at the bottom of the top 10. You've got Manny. What if, I don't think it's going to happen, but let's say somehow Manny Pacquiao upsets Errol Spence. Again, look at these scenarios. He upsets Errol Spence in August. I mean, again, Pacquiao started at flyweight. He's 42 years old. You know, I mean, why wouldn't a welterweight Gervonta Davis want to take on that fight? Keith Thurman's only 5'7". You know, PBC's still got him. He's coming off a loss to Pacquiao. Again, that's not a size matchup. That, again, this is all if Davis comes through, you know, Saturday night. And I'll be the first to say, if he does,
it'll look good, too, you know.
Right.
If
I think
he struggles and wins, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. If he really struggles and wins, he might do it anyway. But then, like you said, people aren't going to be talking. They're not going to have as much belief. So, you know, Sean Porter's not a tall guy. But, you know, now Sean Porter was a middleweight in the amateurs. You know, he's got a win over Usyk in the amateurs. So the guy, even though he's getting older now, you know, strength. But again, you know, they talk about Danny Garcia at 154, but what if, you know, what if he was going to be Davis's first welterweight fight or something? There's all kinds of possibilities out there with PBC with their depth, especially at welterweight. So I think as long as he looks solid Saturday night and wins, you're going to see it.
That'd be crazy. There is 45 minutes left of the show. We do have Carcino 310-503 coming up to talk about their thoughts here. Two more fights with John here. Lubin and Rosario, and then Lomachenko and Nakatani. How do you see these ones playing out?
Well, I've always liked this Lubin-Rosario fight even before they signed it, because I think I had tweeted out, started thinking about it. You know, this is a fight, and I'll still say it. I mean, nothing's changed. I mean, this is a fight. Both of these dudes could be down four times in six rounds. I mean, you know, they've both got good pop, and they both don't have good chins. You know, you saw Lubin get staggered badly by Gaucher late in the fight. Now, Gaucher took Jermonte Clark out after that. So, you know, maybe if you're a Lubin fan, you can say, hey, maybe Gaucher, when he wants to throw, brings more pop than we thought. I mean, he's never been known as a puncher. But, you know, he hurt Lubin. Of course, Charlo has become a puncher. That was when he kind of started getting on that puncher run, and Charlo, you know, Jermell Charlo got Lubin out and around. But Lubin does not – he's kind of up and down in his performances to me, doesn't have that good of a chin. Rosario's up and down his performances, doesn't have that good chin. Both guys, though, do have good pop. So doesn't mean either guy couldn't land the one shot and somebody ends up out of there, but this really is a fight where you could have multiple knockdowns in this fight. Makes it a tough fight to call. You know, Lubin's a favorite. I see it that way, too, just for a better all-around game. But this is certainly a fight that either guy can get knocked out in. I just think that with Lubin's better all-around game, he probably should be the last one left standing in this fight. And he wins it. I would think this one's going to end up in a knockout. So, I think Lubin's going to, you know, win by knockout. This is definitely a fight that both guys could be down. I mean, if you want to watch a potential action fight where both guys are on the canvas, this is the one to check out. So tough one to call because of these factors. Again, a fight with Rosario, he can win this fight. This is not one where I see Lubin as a big, heavy, solid favorite, but I think he's just got a better all-around game, and he should be able to be the last one left standing in that one. And then Lomachenko and Nakatani, I think Nakatani earned by going the distance with Lopez and then getting the upset over Verdejo, coming back late for the KO. Nakatani did crack the legit top 10, so you do have to be fair. You've got to look at that with this fight. So not a bad comeback fight for Lomachenko in terms of fan value. You know, he is fighting a lightweight top 10 guy, and Lomachenko's still at the top of the lightweight division, even though, you know, Teofimo Lopez is the champ now. There is only one real lightweight champ, and it's Teofimo Lopez. I think what we have to be a little bit cautious about with Nakatani that people aren't looking at going into this one is, you know, let's remember, Nakatani went the distance with Lopez, and, you know, he stopped for Verdejo. But in those two fights, I'll tell you, go find me some rounds he won. You know, you're not going to find much. And now he's fighting Loma.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I think people are kind of losing sight of that. I mean, he's big for the weight, but this guy against his two best opponents, he's shown a lot of toughness. I mean, I'll be the first to say that. He's shown tremendous toughness, but he hasn't won a lot of rounds. So, you know, Lomachenko is a guy that obviously is, you know, tough to hit, brings a lot of skill. But, you know, Lomachenko's flaw, and I said this before the Lopez fight, so I've been consistent on this. You know, Lomachenko's flaw is when he starts trying to be too perfect and he just doesn't throw. And he's not going to get that out of his system all of a sudden. So I think this fight, you know, should be a potentially relatively easy decision win for Lomachenko. You think with the toughness that Nakatani has shown, that if Lomachenko could get a stoppage here, I'll go as far as to say, you know, that would be a statement. You know, he's got enough skill to possibly, you know, if he pressed himself to maybe do it, but that's a statement. But I don't think he will be aggressive enough to do that. And I see a path for Nakatani here, though, even with the problems I've said? Yeah, I do. But I think Nakatani will have to be, if he wants a shot at pulling the upset, I don't think he can be waiting, you know, and then hope he's going to land like one big shot late after taking a bunch of punishment like he did with Verdejo. I think he's got to take advantage of the fact that he is a tough guy and got a lot of size for the weight, and be hyper aggressive with, you know, Lomachenko. Really get after him, really try to rough him up, really let his hands go, so that if Lomachenko is trying to be too perfect and gets too cautious and gets too gun-shy, that he's winning rounds. You know, that's something we haven't seen him do against Lopez or Verdejo. So I don't know if he can do it, but if he does that, then I think he gives himself a chance at an upset here. But, you know, if he's just going to be kind of big and stand there and try to box with Lomachenko and hope he lands something late and gets him tired or something like that, I don't think that's going to happen, and he'll just lose a lopsided decision. I would think that's the more likely scenario here.
There we have it. I appreciate you swinging through tonight and talking boxing with me, John.
All right, Chris. Great to be here as always. Enjoy the fights this weekend, and we'll have a lot to talk about in the future.
There we go. You take it easy. Have a good night.
Take care, Chris.
All right. Let's bring in Carcino to the fold. Let's just where the switch. There you go. Switchboard was acting up for a second. Carcino, man, what's going on? How you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on, man? Yeah,
hey.
Got a chance to get in here, man. It's been a crazy couple of weeks. Crazy.
Yeah, definitely. You've been real busy and whatnot.
So, man, it's a lot of stuff I wanted to talk about. Deontay Wilder, definitely wanted to talk Wilder Fury. I was mad I missed that call. I wanted to be on that one. That was the one that got the most attention, that was so telling. That presser was so revealing. When Wilder didn't want to talk and was just like, he's so locked in, and it's clear, 100% clear, that mentally out of it, completely psyching himself up for this fight, you know, and believing that he could beat Tyson Fury just by getting close to him. He one punch is going to win him the fight. And it's a wrong approach to take in a fight of this magnitude, because Tyson Fury already knows he has the formula to beat you, because he knows he can outbox you all night long. You know, and now all he wants to do is basically put on a performance where he sets Wilder up to knock him out, you know, and he probably feel like, oh, I could have gotten this guy out if I chose to play it safely, then do, you know, what needed to be done. But in the press conference, you can see Wilder's completely disturbed by the whole process, you know. So I'm looking at it and I'm like, yeah, I could tell it's like one punch and he's going to go right back to being Deontay Wilder. All this new stuff he's working on, he's going to try it. But it's like when you're learning it for a camp and it's looking good and you're feeling good and you get in the ring and it's just not flowing well, you're going to go back to what you originally do at that time. And you're going to go back to trying to land.
Or you can get stuck between styles, you know. where you're kind of in between. We saw that with Hurd, where you're like, well, which one is it, dude? You're either you or you're not.
Exactly, and that made that was so bad for him because that fight was a knockout dragout. It wasn't even supposed to be. Like, I was like, oh, my God. And that's when you're trying to learn new things because you feel like, okay, I don't know it all. I do need help, and I need to definitely, you know, make some adjustments. So at this point in Juxture, I just see that Malik Scott is not the answer. All this guy does is take new pictures with his wife on Facebook. He has not actively really been in boxing at all. Only person he's working with, only person he's dealing and working with is Deontay Wilder. That's it. And, I mean, he basically ruined the whole price trying to talk for Deontay Wilder. Like, I'm going to do the talking. He really talked himself into exposing himself. He was like, I never told anybody that I bust your eardrum. You just told everybody that. I didn't say a word about that. I was like, how are you going to teach him how to do it? Yeah, but you bringing up my eardrum? No, you just did. You told everybody, yeah, you bust my eardrum, man. I mean, that happens. We were sparring in the ring. He was like, yeah, but, like, how did it happen? So how can you teach him something that you couldn't do? So he's like, look, you can teach him whatever you want. It's not going to work when it's all said and done. And I believe it, 100% believe it. It is not going to save him one bit. So I was very intrigued, and I would definitely watch this fight for the reason that they're trying to get Deontay Wilder to jab, move his head, don't be just a one-punch fighter, actually throw body shots, like jab to the body.
Right, the body shot. Yeah. We haven't seen a body shot from him in a long time.
Exactly, and like I've only seen the jab really used once, and then he goes back to not using it. And I think he's going to revert back to doing what he usually do in these situations. And it's sad, you know, and I don't know where he's going to go from there, but to me that was the most telling part about that. And I'm like, I'm betting everything on Fury. And I'm betting on a stop. I'm betting this ain't even going to the card. He's going to get beat. The brakes are going to get beat off him from round one. The jab's going to, because he has no answer for the jab. He does not
have an
answer.
Well, this is by far the hardest stylistic matchup for him, for anybody in the heavyweight division. You know, if he fought Dillian White, that'd be different. If he, even Joshua, yeah, it's just, I got to give him credit, though, for wanting a trilogy, just like, screw it, man. You know, trying to believe in yourself, trying to change, that's cool. We'll see that night, though. But, yeah, to go back in there with a guy that has won so many rounds, that's I give
he
him credit
no
for
choice.
That part. I really do give him
he
credit
no
for that
part. He has no choice because his whole legacy is built around it. His legacy is built on being the warrior and the guy. So if he'd have let this step aside and he took a tune-up fight, okay, but he'd have to come back to Fury because the people wouldn't let him get away with it. The people, because according to everybody
well, the people
else.
People aren't letting him get away with this either. I mean, the people have been destroying him because they wanted to see the other fight. So, you know,
yeah,
I don't. I think
too,
he was.
Still,
I think he was damned
still,
if he did, damned if he don't.
Yeah, but they respect the fact that he wanted to, you know, get the fight on. I mean, overseas they're ticked. But here, you know, the people that's actually Deontay Wilder followers, they want to see this fight.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, they feel like you owe because, you know, you got your butt whooped last time. Like, he come up with everything. He with the shake weight and all that. He know he lost.
Yeah.
So it's right. Mentally in his head that he knows he lost that fight. And he knows he needs to have that corrected to try to, because he's all about, like, persona and everything and his image and what he looked like and all that stuff. So that's him. He's always been that guy and trying to create his bomb squad, promote that. And now he's got to focus and be the fighter. has got to back it up. So he's psyching himself up, trying something new, because if you thought you won and if it was just something he did illegally, then you wouldn't need to work on anything. You'd be like, well, I can just do the same thing
that
I was doing the other day.
Right, yeah, so, it won't be any different because it'll just be not cheating.
No, yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
That's a good point, yeah.
You're changing trainers, you're flipping things around, you know, it's just like all
over
the place.
It looks like he's focused, though, doing it. We'll see if it works.
He's psyching himself up. And like in Tyson Fury, it doesn't fool him. Like, he knows. He's like, oh, this is false confidence because – he's like, I've seen this. You know, once he gets hit or the fight starts, you know, like, he's going to resort back to being, you know, the same guy he's always been. And this is why a lot of them have basically put Tyson Fury as the favorite. So I'm looking forward to seeing the fight. I think Tyson Fury now knows, like, I got Wilder figured out. So I think he's kind of he's going to definitely work everything through the jab. I think he's going to really do that. Just the jab is going to be the dictation of the fight because he can't move his head. And the way he's stepping in with the jab now, he's putting power behind that jab. And that's what hurt Wilder more than the right hands. The right hands won't come to the second round. Wilder will be expecting the right hands and waiting on it, but it won't come until the second round or maybe the third round. He's not going to reveal it. He's going to fake. Tyson Fury is going to fake like he's going to throw the right hand and just pepper him with jab, hard jab, teasing jab, but he's going to jab him. And while Wilder's reacting to all the feints, he's going to realize, wow, I learned and practiced on all this offense. My defense, it's really not there. And I don't know how to stop this jab from pumping me in the face. Why? I mean, what Malik Scott was teaching me did not prepare me for this. Because it's the same thing that happened to Malik Scott. He's like, yeah,
I got to admit, I thought for sure. I thought for sure, Garcino, that you would start with Jermall Charlo against Montiel. I thought you'd start with that. And I know there's a rant coming, so let's get to it, sir. Let's get to it. I am shocked, Garcino. You're a changed Garcino.
No.
We got to talk off radio because something's going on. No, let's hear it. Charlo Montiel.
It's not a rant. I'm just going to tell everybody, including Chris here, I told you so. I told you about these Charlos. They're airbrushed. They're not real. I told you about these Charlos. They're eye candy. That's it. They look good. They look the part. They talk the part. And then when the fight actually takes place, you find out they're not the part. So it was just another mishap, you know. So, and the reason for it was the fact that he was fighting a tough fight. Montiel could fight. People don't know that Juan Montiel can actually fight. He's rugged. I wish I would have got a chance to get in there because I was like, yeah, you know, they took a cupcake fight. You know, basically, I don't think he could hurt, like, knock out, you know, Charlo. But he's just like a scrappy piece of metal, you know, just he just keeps going. You know, you can hit him with good shots and everything. You think, like, okay, he's going to break in the next round.
Yeah, he's wobbling. He's almost out. No, he's not.
Yeah, he just keeps coming back with punches and activity. Now, the thing is when I, you know, of course, 6 years ago, or probably longer, me and the Charlos had this falling out. Everybody knows about it. It's legendary. So when I said something about the Charlos, it was never from a space of, And, you know, it was always going to be that cloud of, you're hating on them. I'm like, I'm giving you a boxing reason why they can't win these fights, or they're not going to beat these guys or that guy, and why they're being basically babied and carried through. This is what Al Haymon and their BBC fighters, this is what they do. They cupcaking them along. Now, there's no reason why Charlo should have put out the type of performance he put out in this fight. I mean, one, not taking anything away from Montiel, Charlo did not look good in this fight at all to me. He gassed.
Yeah, he looked way better in the last fight against Derevyanchenko. I mean, that was like his most complete performance, and then he followed it up with a very uneven performance, that's for sure.
I'll give you that, but he just still faded in that fight as well. And Derevyanchenko closed the show out. You know, he won the rounds at the end to make it close. Jamal won all the early rounds. He had those in the bank. It was the later rounds where Derevyanchenko started to come back in the fight, and it made it a close fight towards the end.
But he looked better, is my point.
Yeah, he looked better, though, than this. Yeah, he looked better because he's more athletic. And, you know, and that's athleticism was going to kill Derevyanchenko. You know, keep turning and everything else, but you know, Charles' athleticism will get him there, but the problem is what's connected to all of his fights is Jamal Charlo more than Jamel, but they both do it. They fade in fight. When he fought Austin Trout at 54, we thought, oh, well, he's got to go up and wait. That's the reason why. He's just got to go up and wait. He can no longer make the weight. That's why he's fading in the fight. No, he's fading again. 6-7 rounds, he starts to fade. And there is a reason. He trains hard. But when you're not treating your body the same way, what you're putting into it, you should have the same discipline. Because there's something you're not doing right that's causing you to fade in all of these fights. Because you're going to run into a guy who you can't afford to fade against. And then you're going to be out of there. Now everybody went to dumping on Charlo after that fight. You know, because everybody's prisoners of the moment. But I'm like, look. I've told you this for 4, 5, 6 years, and they've been the same fighters and have not progressed. They have not progressed at all. Now, Jamel Charlo is more of the boxer. Jamal was more of the power guy because he's a little bit heavier than Jamel. But the thing is, Jamel is the more cautious of the two. He's more like, okay, I'm going to be a little slick and stay on my toes and box a little bit more. Which he's had a more, like I would say, more famed career, and then he had the water bottle incident, and that was that. But they fight the same type of way. They fight with amateurish style to where they telegraph all of their punches, and they just throw them with, like, tight fists, like they bite in their bottom lip and just swinging. I mean, every punch Charlo was throwing, you could see coming. I mean, did you see him late in that fight? His coordination was off. He was pushing his punches. Like, it was terrible. I said, what is happening? Is he this tired? Because he got really rocked.
He definitely gassed.
He got really rocked really good in, like, I believe the 7th or 8th round. He got really rocked by a shot because he underestimated the punching power of Montiel. Because they figure, hey, I've been in here with these light punches that they keep feeding me. Didn't realize, oh, this guy can actually hit. Now I got to just try to survive the night. But it opens up the door now because he should have been fighting, what's his name, Moringa? That's the guy, the fight he's been avoiding. Now, they fought the loser of the fight that he fought when they had that controversial fight with, what's his name, Dennis Hogan? So they went and rewarded Hogan with the
Munguia?
Fight.
Yeah, you're talking about Munguia is the one he's...
Yeah, when Munguia fought Hogan and Hogan lost. And Hogan lost the fight, but it was controversial. They went ahead and changed everything to... They changed everything around to... saying, oh, okay, well, we're going to, because he was supposed to fight the winner. Charlo was supposed to fight the winner of that fight. And he didn't. He fought Hogan. He was like, well, we felt Hogan won the fight, so we're going to fight Denny Hogan. I'm like, Denny Hogan, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So, but I'm like, because I'm like, he's a light puncher, and he had a good style for a power puncher that come forward like Moringa, but I want to see that fight with him and Charlo. Everybody does. But why are we not getting those fights at middleweight? This guy had, like, what, 6-7 fights since he's been at middleweight? He fought, like, one time in 2018. He fought nobody. Derevchenko was, like, his first fight at middleweight. When is he going to fight somebody? I'm tired of him every time Canelo fight. Oh, Canelo's a bum. Oh, Andrade's a bum. Well, you and Andrade are internet champions. You guys are doing a lot of talking, and nobody's fighting. So I'm like, look, you guys haven't beat anybody. When you guys beat some people, then maybe you could start holding a conversation about who's the best and I could beat this guy can't beat me. But after every time somebody has a pay-per-view fight, you know, here come you. So my thing is they're fighting. You guys need to get active because there's no way you guys are in your 20s and you guys aren't having 7 fights in, like, 6 years. I mean, it's been longer than that, I think, probably. Because we're going to be in 6 years. You got 6 fights in 6 years. But this is what we're – this is the new norm now to put up with these Charlos and this new thing here. And then I'm hearing another thing about the Manny Pacquiao fight. The Pacquiao fight with Errol Spence, they were coming up with all types of monitoring for the blood testing. They had already had the fight agreed upon. Then they want to try to work on testing regulations after the fight was already agreed upon. And none of it was making any sense. It's like, look, we've already agreed to the random blood test. Why are y'all trying to make changes to how the blood test is being conceived and done? It was, like, ridiculous.
Well, Toes was big on Twitter talking about that they're not doing it when they were doing it, but then the start times and all that. So I think he must have spurred some of that on as well. Victor Conte.
Yep. And that's what the problem was. I mean, a lot of these places are still with, like, COVID and everything else. They didn't have a lot of people working. So it's like, look, a lot of people are not even doing it right now because of COVID, and a lot of people are not back to work, you know. So it was like, why hire all these people if the offices were closed? Why are we hiring these people to do testing for blood in the labs and there's no one there? So it's a lot of things that they couldn't possibly get done at the time. So it was a challenge, but they still want to do the fight. So they were like, yeah, we're still going to do the fight and everything else. We've got to get this situated, ironed out, because people are getting a little crazy. So now fight definitely happened. And now they signed in a stipulation where Bud Crawford is still going to get screwed over because they're sitting over there saying, oh, well, here's the problem. We're looking at Keith Thurman, Sean Porter, too, to fight to see who's going to fight Errol Spence. I'm like, what? Errol Spence going to fight the winner of Sean Porter and Keith Thurman? That's supposed to happen in September, right after the Pacquiao fight in August. And I'm like, are you serious? And then in February, they're going to have the Errol Spence match in Dallas Stadium because the NFL season will be over. So they want to have Errol come back in February. They're still working on that now. So they're already working 2 fights in advance. Already working 2 fights in advance. It is not, to me, it's just, it doesn't make no sense. So you want to have, so I guess they're figuring, okay, after Errol beats Pacquiao, we'll have the winner of the Keith Thurman, Sean Porter fight in Texas against Aerosmith in Dallas Stadium again, and we're in 2022, and people are still going to be going to see it and still saying, hey, when is he fighting Bud Crawford? So that'll be another two fights.
So Bud Crawford. Date is October 23rd, and then he's done with Top Rank. Do you think that they give him a fight around, you know, in that springtime, the stuff you're talking about, let's say March, and then they'd fight later? Because Crawford hasn't said he's going to go to the PBC or anything like that. You know what I mean? So it's kind of up in the air in general. We just know he's got one left.
Yeah, he's got one fight left. They're trying to do an extension deal or work out something where they could be a partnership, where they could help them with the distribution, kind of like what Manny Pacquiao did. You know, he was had his own company. He wasn't really signed with Top Rank. They were more like for distribution, you know, like they had a partnership, more of a deal than him.
But why would you do that? Why would you do that when they don't have opponents for you?
Well, see, that's the thing. He's a free agent, which means that he's using them as a partnership for a certain period of time. Like for certain fights, they'll do a certain type of partnership deal if they can provide the fight. But if not, he's a free agent. He could go and fight whoever he wants. See, that's what happened with Manny when he restructured his deal, and he did the fights over there, and he went back fighting with Top Rank. They just helped do his fight that he did with overseas. And I forgot who he fought. I think it was probably Brandon Rios, but I don't think Rios was with Top Rank, but Pacquiao wasn't. And then they helped him.
Well, if he signs a new deal with them, that's ridiculous too, because why would you sign with Top Rank now?
Well, the thing is, that makes no sense. It depends, because you get guaranteed money. You know, I mean, that's the only thing about being independent. See, it pays off for Floyd. Floyd had already spent his time winning world championships and making himself a worldwide commodity where he could sell just himself. Like Floyd can sell himself. He doesn't really need a promoter. So for him, he can go out and do a show, a pay-per-view, and it's going to make numbers. But Crawford.
But we know Al takes less than Bob, though. Al takes less than Bob in a pay-per-view fight, so why wouldn't he just sign with Al for a couple fights?
I mean, he might do that, or he might just go with his own and go be a free agent and do what Mikey Garcia is doing. You know, just like Teofilio Guzman. You know, I mean Lopez, Teofilio Lopez. What he did, you know, he just got a new deal with Top Rank. He worked out something where he gets paid more money, but he's not ready yet. Most of these young fighters, they saw Floyd, and Floyd was, I'm my own boss. I do this and that. And a lot of them want to be Floyd. They don't realize you're not Floyd. you haven't put in 20 years already doing this to build your name up. You need Top Rank. You need someone to get you out there and promote. You don't know how to promote yourself. Like Bud Crawford can't go out and do a pay-per-view just Bud. I mean, he can. Like,
well, right. He needs an opponent. He needs Spence or, you know, something like that.
Right, he needs the opponent, but he also needs to be seen. You know, he needs the world to see him. So if you don't have the right team to help promote you, you could be – if everything's on you, see, people don't realize that. When they're a free agent, they think, I'm free. I can just do what I want. Who's promoting it? Who's going to put it on there? Who's the network? Top Rank has a network. You got to go to the
right,
zone.
Right, but Fox uses football to get it out. So, I mean, that's pretty good. You know what I mean? They push it more than ESPN.
Yeah, that's true. Fox uses football, but still, if you look at the numbers, PBC is not really killing it. They're doing okay, but the people that watch football and watch the commercials, it's only a fraction of those people would actually go and watch the fight. They watch it if it's on television and there's nothing going on, or if it follows an event that just happened. Like if they're watching
I'm saying
but yeah. I understand that.
But
so
Spence and Crawford would be pushed, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, it would definitely be pushed if he signed with Heyman. But here's the thing.
Right.
Why would you want to do that if they're not going to
make
that?
Because all the opponents are 47. All the opponents are 47.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. You don't want to – it all depends on what you want to do. Like, I want to, like, Tony Ferguson, rather. You know, here's the thing. Tony Ferguson signed, and he didn't sign with PBC, and he basically was getting screwed because he didn't sign with PBC. Now, people are looking at it from the perspective of what, you know, you coming from Top Rank. You're not their guy. You're not in-house like them. You think they're bringing him over there to beat Terrence Crawford, and they're going to say, hey, we got Terrence, so we're good. No, they're bringing him over there. So any decision, they want to boost up Errol. So, you know, fighters look at that situation. That's why they know the PPC way. They know how they're just another – everything they complained about, this is my problem with PPC, everything that they claimed that they were going to be, we're going to be different. All this corruption in boxing and all this, they're just another organization doing it themselves. They're just doing the same thing, in-house fighting and cupcake fights, no great fights. You're having an overrated fighter fighting another overrated fighter, and we're supposed to say, oh, man, this is great.
I don't know about no great fights. Showtime's got the best fights of the year.
No.
And that's BBC. Who's got a better schedule, then?
I saw some great fights on the Zone. I mean, Showtime do put together some.
No, I'm saying the whole year, though, right now. Right now,
well,
they
right
got
now, it. Yeah, right now, I would say, because a lot of this was COVID, so a lot of fights couldn't be made because a lot of fighters was having trouble, you know, traveling.
Too,
you know, a lot of fighters had problems traveling, you know, so you couldn't really make it, you know. I mean, I enjoyed the
Damon
Hayes
fight. I mean,
that Damon
goes for PBC, though, too. PBC is the same. I mean, they got people from out of the country.
Yeah, not a lot. Most of their
Showtime's got the best
United
schedule. There's really no. I mean, May they have the best schedule. They're about to do a Castagne. They're about to do an Undisputed. You know, they got a Nonito Donaire, Casamore. They got Figueroa Fulton. Either way, speaking of, let's get in because we don't have a ton of time left in the show. Gervonta Davis, Mario Barrios, Erickson Luba, Rosario, and then Lomachenko and Nakatani. Give me your take on those, sir.
Lomachenko, I think he wins by decision or late round stoppage. I think he's too fast, too experienced, and he'll be back in his zone. You know, this is he's back comfortable finally. It's a good tune up fight for him. Lubin, I see Lubin getting up off the canvas to win a decision. But
that's a good call. That's what I think, too.
Yeah,
that's a really good call.
It's going to
be a tough fight.
Oh, yeah, it's a tough fight, but I think he'll win by at least majority decision. I would say I have one card being a draw. So, yeah, but I think he'll have to get up off the canvas, and he'll tough it out. It's going to be one of those type of fights. He's going to have to show grit, use jab, actually use his boxing ability because he's in there with a puncher. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be quite interesting, you know. So I'm all eager for that one. Now, I'm trying to think. Who was the other fight?
Davis Barrios.
Davis and Barrios. Really? Another setup fight for Gervonta Davis. Now, I like Barrios. I just don't think Barrios is he's definitely not. This is a fake championship fight if I've ever seen it. He's not. No, he's going to. I told you, this fight is really Gervonta Tank Davis versus the scale. That's it. If he can come in focused, he can get on that scale and make weight, and he's in shape for the fight, and he's mentally prepared, then he's going to be great. If not, Barrios has a chance. He's not going to knock Tank out, but he has a chance. And, I mean, to me, he's a little bit too open for Tank. If Tank comes in and everything is everything, Tank's speed and his punching power is like middleweight, like straight middleweight. So when you start seeing Tank Davis coming down the lane and he's coming straight down the middle with those punches and he's, like, using his speed and athleticism, I just think he's going to turn it up. And his body punching, this is one thing about him that that to me has changed a lot with him is his body attack is very underrated for Tank, and it definitely have an effect when he hits people. So I saw him use that to break down a fight he was losing early in his career, and I was like, man, those body shots, brutal. I was like, I never saw that in his repertoire before. And he really was using the body shots, and that's what he's going to need on Berrios. You're going to have to get to Berrios' body. But the fight is from Josh Taylor. Why did he run from it? And I'm like, you guys are running from the fight. Josh Taylor and Tank should fight. That's the champion. That is the champion of that
division.
Well,
Josh Taylor's got to fight this summer, so that wouldn't happen till the fall. Or that probably wouldn't happen till like, I don't know, it's August or September is when Taylor's fighting his mandatory.
Yeah, he's fighting a mandatory that wouldn't have had to take place had they made the Davis fight. They didn't want the fight. They don't want Josh Taylor. They don't want Tank in there with him, and I know why, but they're not looking, oh, he's too small time for us. But Berrios is prime time. He's pay-per-view. You see, this is what I was talking about. This is why PBC has started to get on my nerves with this. I am sick and tired of it. I was sick and tired of it when everybody else was doing it. So I'm like, you guys are telling me we're not doing this, we're doing that, and we're changing the game, and we're moving in different direction, then where's the different direction? I'm not seeing it.
Well, that's an in-depth conversation that unfortunately we don't have the segment time. We just got a handful of minutes before it cuts us off.
Okay, well, let me give
anything
you my prediction
else,
on
sir?
It. I got Berrios. I mean, I got Tank winning by decision, by unanimous decision. They're going to give it to him by unanimous decision.
But you think he'll cleanly win?
Yeah, I think he'll cleanly win. It'll be competitive early on, though, but I think he'll completely win because I think he'll be in shape for this. I don't think he'll come in out of shape.
You're right,
so
though. That's usually Tank's thing. It's like, what kind of camp did he have? That's when you know what you'll get in the ring. You usually don't know it. Sometimes you can't even tell on the scale. So you got to see it fight night. It's very true because he, like you said, he's a vicious body puncher. He's got a ton of accuracy and all that. But, yeah, we'll see. All right, man, I appreciate you taking time out.
All right, thanks for having me on.
On an NBA night, too.
Yeah, I know I got to get back to the game, but thanks, man. I appreciate having me on.
Yes, sir. Take it easy, man. Peace.
Take it easy.
Yeah, as far as Berrios goes, it's true. I mean, you know, he can jab and he can pivot and he likes to, like, step to the side. Just looking at that Akhmadov fight, he just wasn't acting enough in it. He does make his punches count when he throws them, but he needs to throw that jab more. And Akhmadov was able to get inside fairly early. Short shots on the inside was very successful for him. Beyond that jab, he likes to throw the left hook. Sometimes he'll time someone coming in. Will Berrios lead right hands. Sometimes he'll counter. You know, he's got a little step-back counter game, but he leans, kind of like what Carcino was saying, he leans in when he punches. And, of course, when you're on the inside, you're going to lean a little bit, but he leaves himself open. Like, he's just not – like, he moves his head and stuff, and he looks to counter, he moves his feet, but he's not – responsible defensively. And when he's on the inside, he's really not all that effective. But those knockdowns are what was able to get past that opponent. And he definitely has a nice left hook. Like I said, the straight right hand's kind of iffy. Sometimes I think we'll see him pumping the jab more. I just realized I scheduled the show a half hour short than I normally did. That's why I'm kind of all jammed up here at the end. But I'm going to go Tank. I think he'll actually TKO him. I think it'll be a TKO stoppage. I think Lomachenko will win cleanly against Nakatani. Lubin and Rosario is going to be the fight of the weekend. both of them I can see going down. I do want to see, like John Incarcino said, will Lubin use his overall skills? Because he's going to need them. We know he's got knockout power, but we know he's got to, like, use his overall skill and not worry about just knocking somebody out. That's a big thing, and he's going to need it here. Like I said, that's the fight of the weekend for me right here, Rosario Lubin. I think Lubin is going to have – he's going to start out safe. Then he's going to pick up the pace and try to – once he gets Rosario, who does tend to get hurt in fights, but he's got that power counter shot. So I see Lubin, you know, coming inside and getting clocked and dropped. But I do think that as long as it's not like a Charlo shot or something that just gets you so perfect like Charlo did, that was early in the fight, you know. So I think Lubin will pull it off, much like Carcino was saying. But definitely I see him both going to the mat, and you definitely should KO, knockout, whatever. It's going to end in a stoppage one way or another. But I see Lubin coming out of that in a great fight, in something that he proves himself. You know, he's had some good performances since then. They've been building them back. But this is where it's like, all right, dude, you're facing a guy who can punch. And when you got him hurt, you can't be too crazy with him. All right, it looks like it cut me off, so I think we're done anyway. Peace.